Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader,
attorney, radio, talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make band-aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show. 77 WABC.
Born Dilly, born Dilly, at the seaside bar. Right there, put in the sound. Listen to his guitar. You say your mama's gonna meet you when the morning comes. Yeah, Papa's gonna beat you cause he knows you're out on the run.
Oh, please. It's a horrible re-entry song.
Well, that's what you just left him to his own devices, Lee. Let's pick a beach song. You told Justin B. Love to pick a beach song.
So you pick Springsteen, who I hate, I loathe, I totally despise. Or maybe he chose Springsteen.
Maybe he tried to get under your skin.
No, because here it is. Springsteen talked about he grew up in a lower middle class setting in Freehold, New Jersey, you know, right where the tracks are, where the illegals show up each day for day labor. And now he is in the trendy town of the one percenters, Rumson.
Where?
Rumson.
I'm kidding. Huh. I'm becoming more and more familiar with Rumson.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you spent your weekend, in Rumson?
I did. I spent Saturday and part of Sunday in Rumson, New Jersey. And it's just a delightful community. It was like the opposite of the concrete jungle here in Manhattan, which I love. I love New York City more than any city I've ever lived in. But last week was a bit much, Curtis Lee. It was a bit intense for me. So it was very nice to get on the open road Saturday morning, head out to Rumson, take in the green, big full breath, full of nice oxygen, see the water. It was very tranquil, very, very nice, relaxing departure from a very, very hectic and intense and quite controversial work week.
One of the hottest zip codes in America for the one percenters, where even the lawn jockeys are white, one of the whitest suburbs. So was there a move to take down the white lawn jockeys and replace them with black lawn jockeys?
Yeah,
which was the tradition?
Saw a couple of protesters.
Huh. But anyway, so how are you? Because last week you were under siege after your docket performance on The Specialist, the program that you're a co-hostess of on the Fox News Channel Monday through Fridays from five to six. You really way laid into the president. You caught it from Trumpers and Trumpets.
Ooh.
Not just criticism, but a tsunami of people who are threatening bodily harm on you. And so a lot of people were concerned about your welfare.
Yeah, and I'll take this moment. You know how much I enjoy making you uncomfortable, Curtis Sliwa, much like the hug I gave you on Friday when you guys all gave me that beautiful organ. I want to publicly thank you because, you know, we're new at this. We're about 3 months into this partnership here at the new Midday Show. And I was feeling quite exposed last week, quite vulnerable, like you say, under attack. I get it. It's America. When you say what you want to say, you got to deal with the consequences of it. I'm a big grown woman. I get that. But you gave me quite a bit of protective cover. You manned up. You stepped up to the plate as my radio partner, my work husband. And for that, you're going to hear me say something in this moment that I'm not going to say too often. But Curtis, thank you. I do appreciate it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, how come you didn't get me a winning Powerball lottery ticket? You know, what is it, like close to $600 million dollars now?
It's never enough for you.
You could have bought me a few Powerball tickets. I saw people all over the place like lemmings online, you know, just waiting to get that Powerball tickets. Oh, yeah. Let me see. 17, 19, 39, 43, 68. The Powerball was 13. Come on.
It's not my thing. I bought a lottery ticket one time when it was over $1 billion. So this was probably 2-3 years ago. I'd rather do the horsies. I think I am going to take you up on your picks because you did very, very good this year.
Yes.
So I will be doing some horse betting, but miss me with the lottery. Not into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't you think that Ebony K. Williams, so grateful for the support that we gave her, the TLC that we gave her in a time of need last week, should have at least bought some Powerball tickets for all of us here at WABC. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
I actually have a different gift that you're going to be gifted with this week. I'm very excited about it. It's something that's going to be right up your alley, and I think it'll be better than a Powerball ticket. This is actually a personalized, special for Curtis Sliwa item. I've been meaning to get it for you, but this is the perfect time.
Oh, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to conduct this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. I'm walking the floor here at WABC on the 17th floor at Tupan Plaza. I barely see anybody here. What are they at? Solar eclipse watch parties today?
I know. The train was rather empty today, too. Where is everybody?
What are they putting on those glasses?
Oh, yeah.
Staring up at the sky, waiting for what looks like, it actually looks kind of seductive if you look at it, the merging of black and white, because clearly you'll have a black sky and a yellow sun. And it looks like the urge to merge, like interracial sex.
Oh, and once again, is this your Rihanna fantasy playing out
already
Monday morning? Goodness.
Just mentioning, yeah. Why else would everyone be so fatut, so crazed about looking up at the sky, avoiding work, standing online for hours at end, staring up at the sky?
I guess because it hasn't happened in, 38 years. Maybe that's the big deal.
Wow, so it actually happened before
it has never
you were
happened.
Born.
Yes, it's never happened in my lifetime. That is correct. This will be my first solar eclipse.
At some point in this program, are you going to depart in order to put those fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi glasses, many of them that have been recalled because they don't work, yeah. You're going to put them on and you're going to be staring up in the solar system?
Well, you've known me a few months now, Curtis. What do you think? Do you think that's my speed? Do you think that's my get down?
Well, only if there was some martinis...
Maybe if it came with a Tom Ford giveaway.
Exactly.
Then maybe I'd go take a
bunch of trendy jet setter folks were there from Hollywood. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, tell me what you're doing. Don't tell me you're at a solar eclipse watch party or that you actually were a gold brick slacker deadbeat, chose not to go to work today because you want to be part of the millions who are going to be staring up at this sun. It looks like it's having the urge to merge, blackness merging with yellowness. It's kind of psychosexual to me when you look at it.
To operative words, to you, Curtis Lee. Well,
our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Meantime, I was out with the Guardian Angels and Nancy Regula, my girlfriend, at the annual Polish Festival in Riverhead. About 50,000 people were there Saturday, 50,000 people were there on Sunday. But I got to tell you, in this age of diversity... it was hard to find any pierogies or kielbasa there.
Those are the code words for Poles, and I'm saying it correctly, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, because, you know, I got a lot of heat when I called you.
Yeah, for calling me a Polak.
You could say it, I can't.
And I said, well, you might as well call me a Yambo. That's steps lower.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, I'm walking around, and obviously this is a festival in which it is projecting Polish pride out there in the east end of Long Island, all the way in Suffolk County, and they had everything but Polish garb and Polish items. You know, occasionally you had a vendor selling Polish food and Polish garb, but it was like one huge flea market. It was a symbol of the time we live in, diversification. You had all other kind of foods, all other kind of ethnic clothing retailers that were there trying to sell and hawk their wares out in the streets
so
of
Riverhead. That's weird, because it was supposed to be to celebrate Polish heritage and lineage, but that, it kind of got lost.
Well, you heard a little bit of the music in the background, but it wasn't what it used to be when I was a kid, when you would have these ethnic festivals and it would be wall to wall, whatever the ethnic pride was being projected. Like over the weekend, you have the Indian Day Parade, which I think went up Madison Avenue, tied the city in knots. But everything there was a focus on East Indian pride.
That culture. Yeah, and see, as somebody who, you know, really appreciates the distinctive cultures that particularly we offer here in America, the melting pot that we are, I'm disappointed to hear that, Curtis. I would have and by the way, where was my invitation? Oh, cricket, silence. I would have loved to have joined you and Nancy at the Polish festival.
After you called me a Polak.
Because
so much heat from so many of our listeners.
You're damn right, because when you know better, you do better. I caught that heat. I educated myself in about 30 seconds on the correct language, and I could have learned so much coming with you and Nancy to the Polish festival and enjoyed, I'm going to presume, a bratwurst or two might have been there. some
true.
Type of police. You know,
no,
so
you mean
my feelings, my feelings are quite hurt that you and Nancy, you particularly, I'm sure Nancy probably would have loved me to be there.
Well, you see,
but you know, you didn't invite me.
If this would have been one of your weekends where you were with your Trendoids jet set as freakazoids out in the South Fork, the South Hamptons.
Hmm.
You know, that's a hop, skip, and a jump to Riverhead. Riverhead's right next to it. It would have been... I would have...
Well, the next time you decide you want to take yourself to the Polish Festival, I hope you remember my number, Curtis.
But you were...
I would have enjoyed that.
You were there in trendy 1% Rumson.
I don't know that I would call
Shore.
Rumson trendy.
Sort of waspy.
Waspy, fine. Trendy, and... It was fun, though. I went and I took in a scrimmage of a soccer game. It's hot outside. Finally, I guess we got, 3 weeks of summer here in New York City?
Yeah. Mm. And meantime, then the big event out in Long Island, which I couldn't believe was being exploited so much, was Cardinal Jose Chavez of El Salvador was visiting Brentwood Central Islip and Hempstead, which are centers of MS-13 activity.
Hmm.
And it was thought that his arrival might be able to put a hurting to the growth and expansion of MS-13. So I'm telling everybody out there, I'm saying, if this guy was so good at eradicating MS-13, this cardinal from the Roman Catholic Church who was visiting from El Salvador, how come there's so much MS-13 in El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras? Obviously, having a cardinal in El Salvador preaching against MS-13 hasn't done jack diddly squat.
Mm.
So what do you really believe his arrival at Central Islip, Brentwood, and Hempstead is going to make a dent? Now, when the president came, he sure made a dent. When Jeff Sessions came, he sure made a dent because a lot of arrests followed. Are any arrests going to follow the removal of the cardinal when he goes back to El Salvador?
Posturing.
The answer is no.
Posturing.
Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Greg, who's patiently waiting on the line in Warwick. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Greg?
Ebony and Curtis, as usual, excellent show. But here's a comment I want to make. You know, you go to these festivals today, they're not like they used to be. These girls today don't want to cook. They don't want to clean. They don't want to get prepped up for anything. All they want to do is sit in front of the TV.
Greg, let me tell you, first and foremost, thank you for that compliment. Number two, I had the great pleasure of visiting Warwick, New York, a couple of times last summer for the Apple Fest, the Apple Orchards, the Fest. I had some delicious cider. Just lovely, lovely community.
Isn't it nice? You got to go down to yesterday's for a beer.
Okay, I'm going to check that. I'm going to take your word, Greg, and check
yesterday's
that out.
A fetch.
Okay.
But these girls today, they're not like, you know,
so it's women's fault,
like
Greg.
Mom used to be, right?
Yeah, but, well, no, my mom was never very much of a cook. She was more of a hamburger helper type of woman. But let me ask you this. Why are you blaming it all on us ladies? Where's the male leadership in projecting this proud Polish cultural moment?
Well, Polish or Italian, we're supposed to sit down in the shade and suck down the beers.
Oh, okay. So it's culturally, it's the responsibility of the women to carry the tradition. Okay, I hear you.
See, on a day like today,
okay,
you suck down the beers. You got your sausage in your hand, your sausage with peppers, or you got your kielbasa in the hand, and you're staring up at the sky to watch this urge to merge between the sun and a black sky.
Let me ask a cultural question real quick, Curtis. In the Polish community and culturally, if there's a big dinner, do the women fix the plates for the men and then bring that to the table like they do often in my black community? Is that how it's done?
Yeah, you wouldn't want the guys fixing the plates. They're half in the bag before the cooking even starts. They're taking a bath in vodka. You know, they're like fish swimming around in vodka. So
I didn't know if that transcended culture where the women fix the plates and bring them to the men, and then when you guys are done eating.
That the women fix the plates because they're not half in the bag.
You guys are so lucky.
If you lit a match in the room where the guys are congregating, you'll all be blown to kingdom come. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That was the prediction of what was going to happen in Boston with that free speech rally. It turned out to be a complete dud.
A little bit of a bust, which is a good thing, by the way.
A complete bust, but everybody wanted it to be a battleground on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
So you had the preservationists, the alt-right, they were looking for a battle. The anti-fascist groups, they were looking for a battle, Black Lives Matter. And guess what? They didn't end up with a battle because the rally ended early and there were barely enough people to participate in this free speech rally.
Thank goodness, because, you know, people sensationalize this stuff like it's cute and funny, but, you know, people get hurt. Look at Heather Heyer last week, killed. And so I'm totally glad that we'll get into it, but that ended up being a complete and total bust.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the Morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
God, I hate this song. Neil Diamond.
Yeah, right.
You know what? Sweet Caroline. It's the theme song for the Boston Red Sox, who I hate, I loathe, I despise as much as Springsteen. I hate Boston cream pie. I hate Boston beans, baked beans. I hate the Boston Bruins, the Boston Celtics, the New England Patriots, the Brady Bunch, Coach Belichick.
Belichick, I love it. You know what's funny is it is Sweet Caroline. That's the lyric to the song. But growing up in the Carolinas, they play this all the time as if it's one of our anthems.
Oh, isn't so you think the boy from Brooklyn created a song?
We know he didn't. We know he didn't. We know we've got the James Taylor song that's really for us, Carolina on My Mind. But many times we will try to hijack Sweet Caroline as well.
Oh,
just
really?
Giving you a little inside Carolina tip.
You mean
absolutely.
Like the Boston Red Sox hijacked my beloved Yankees over the weekend. But anyway, we'll put that aside. And let's go to the audio tape because it was a bust. It was thought, oh, this is going to be round two, Charlottesville and Boston. Both sides were itching for a fight. First, we go to one of the counter demonstrators.
If you do come, you're going to be overwhelmed by a mighty force for love and for justice and for peace. I think all of us need to stand up on the side of love and justice and peace and be united and tell the world that racists and hateful people are not welcome in Boston.
So there were about 30,000 counter-protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a free speech rally that had been set up by libertarian groups, some alt-right groups, long in advance. They were expecting maybe a few hundred. About 100 showed up when all was said and done.
Mm.
This is one of what one of the organizers had to say.
Trump and his administration are complicit in their affirmation of white supremacy and white nationalist views. Have helped to create the atmosphere of hate that has allowed these folks to feel empowered and take public action.
Oh, that happened to be one of the counter-organizers who organized the 30,000 strong who showed up looking for a fight.
Yeah.
But there was no fight.
No. Kind of hard to be a counter when there's no main show. So that's fine. I appreciated her sentiments, but some of this stuff, Curtis, starts to look a bit like political theater. I think people are better suited just standing up for what they believe in the first place and not necessarily feeling like they need to be reactive. I don't necessarily think that's the best approach. But I don't think it's the most effective.
I thought it was interesting. You saw the police chief there in Boston talking about, well, you know, there was some problems along the line of march when some of the people started attacking the police. What do you mean, the anti-fascists who lived to be able to do that?
Hmm.
So everybody went their own way early. The rally ended up like at 1:30 in the afternoon when typically it would have ended about 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah. I think that's what you call, Curtis, a failed agenda. Failed agenda.
So we will see as there are more planned rallies and gatherings around the country in the coming weeks. And there were more statues that were taken down over the weekend under the cover of darkness on your favorite campus, Duke University, where they took down
Boo Duke.
Robert E. Lee. And at the University of Texas, where they took down a total of 4 Confederate statues, the very ones they decided to leave up after the shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, that caused them to remove the statue of Jeff Davis at the time. But they decided to leave Robert E. Lee and the other Confederates up. But under the cover of darkness last night, all 4 were removed.
You got a problem with that, huh, Sleeper?
Sure. I think it's cowardly. I think it is so cowardly.
Stop trying to use my word. I used cowardly last week to describe the president.
Yeah, but you see, this is what you do. You move towards removal of the Confederate symbols. Okay.
Sure.
You have a vote maybe in your city council, town council, village council, whatever. You follow protocol.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Usually there's somebody, veterans of the Confederate daughters of the Civil War who will object. They'll go to court. They'll get a court order. There'll be like a 6-month period of time in which arguments are taken from both sides.
There's a process. You know, I will say I agree because at UNC Chapel Hill, the much better of the Tobacco Road battle schools, we went through the process. We had 2 years it took. We had a General Sanders who was a big Klan person, big Confederate general.
Oh, you mean wasn't Colonel Sanders of KFC?
No, not that one. And the irony real quick here. That was the building that we took our African American studies classes out of, named after him. Anyways, it took several years for our black student movement and our allies on campus to work towards it. Eventually, we had the hall renamed, and ultimately, that was the trip. But it was a process, to your point. It was a process.
I don't have a problem with that.
But it was a process.
Nothing is going to happen overnight that is going to suddenly change whatever the root causes are that allow the Confederate statues to stand all these decades. Yes. But everybody, all of a sudden, because of...
It's reactive. That's my problem. I agree with you. That's just purely reactive.
They just want everything changed overnight, and they don't care what the hell anybody else thinks. Anyway, before we get into that and so much more, up next, we're going to be talking about how everyone's getting freaky deaky about this total solar eclipse of the sun.
Oh, yeah.
Curtis and Ebony. The stories, the moments. The new midday show.
I fought the law and the law won.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
Once upon a time, there was light in my life. But now there's only love in the dark.
Oh, this is so cheesy.
Nothing I can say.
Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart. She's actually performing this. As so many of you are getting half in the bag, putting on glasses, getting ready for this total eclipse of the sun. But in order to get an update on this, because I'm not into this at all, but so many Americans are, Ebony K. Williams.
Oh, no, not me either. You and I have we've got something in common. Go ahead.
Let's go to Jason Kendall. He's part of the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York, and he flew all the way to Glendale, Wyoming, to view the eclipse at 100% of its totality. Good afternoon, Jason.
Good morning for me.
Jason, you sound excited. I have to tell you, the pep in your step is just coming through the airwaves. I love it.
It's a fantastic place out here. Glendale, Wyoming, a little town of 200 people, now has almost 100,000 people here out on the out on the high prairie. It's amazing. So we're sitting here, we're looking at the sun, and I'm looking at it right now with a solar filter, and I can see the sun being eclipsed by the moon right now for me. Now, it's going to be a little bit later for New Yorkers, but it's coming up. It's right here, right now in the west.
Now, question here, because, Jason, as I've seen all the buildup of this euphoria, so many people here, even on our own floor here, don't appear to be working today. They appear to be at these solar eclipse parties and brunches, et cetera. When you're looking up there through whatever filter you are, doesn't it look, by the time the eclipse totally takes place, like the sun and the sky are having sex up there?
Yes, it definitely looks like that.
Does it really, Jason, or is that just Curtis being a freakazoid?
Well, you know, hey, it's totally appropriate. If in about an hour and 15 minutes, we'll have what's called second contact. First contact is when the moon first touches the sun, and then second contact is when the total eclipse occurs. And yeah, that could be looked at as, you know, however you like to look at it. We'll see all of a sudden everything will get dark for us and go to twilight. I have a view on the horizon of over 70 miles, so I'll actually see sunlight on the horizon, but straight overhead I'll see stars.
Now, Jason, for those that have animals in their homes, their domiciles, I have three rescue cats, Hercules, Apollo, and Athena, and they were like bugging out this morning. I don't know if your dog was, Ebony K. Williams, but...
She was a little crazy this morning.
When the solar eclipse comes, are animals extremely confused? Do they start bugging out in advance?
Well, I don't know. I guess that right around here in Glendale, I think everybody's put their dogs away. I don't see anybody's dogs running away, but a couple of praying mantises climbed onto my telescope, so that was kind of weird. But, yes, animals will start to think that because it's night, they'll go, oh, it's time to go to bed. And so birds will come back and put their heads under their wings, and flowers will begin to close, and all sorts of things like that. But for us, it really is quite a mystical journey in a way, because we're way out here. We're going to all of a sudden experience darkness, and you usually get that when you're kind of a big dinner and you want to go to bed. But now we're going to see it, and we'll be wide awake for it. And you should see all these people out here. Everybody's staring at the sun. There's cameras. There's telescopes. Everybody's looking around. And we've got barbecue, too, so that's kind of great.
Now, years ago, Jason, centuries ago, civilizations would look at an eclipse as pretense to bad news, a bad omen. Is that what it will be today? Because the president is going to be addressing us about the longest war we've ever fought in Afghanistan tonight. Can we anticipate bad news as a result of this eclipse?
I don't think the eclipse is giving us the bad news. I think bad news flies on its own wings, as it were. But the solar eclipse itself, I look at it as a very different thing. If you look at all the 100 or 200,000, I mean, it's got to be 100,000 people out here. Everybody's out here having a great time. They said last night in Glendale, they only have like two bars. And there was a crazy, drunken, funny riot, and everybody was running around having a good hoot and holler in time. So I'd have to say that if eclipses today don't predict bad things, they show off the best of what it means. And right now, we're seeing the best of what it means to be an American today. And that's going and making the pilgrimage to see the eclipse. And so New Yorkers won't see a total eclipse, but you can join us at Pioneer Works or at the Museum of Natural History or Liberty Science Center or Columbia University. That's where people are looking at partial eclipse even now.
Yeah, I think this is a good moment too, Jason, because, you know, in the midst of so much divisiveness and tension and really anxiety and fear and just negativity really that's going on in today's climate for political and other reasons, this feels like a moment, Curtis, where everybody can just kind of take all that down, take their guard down, and enjoy something pretty universal. That feels pretty productive.
Absolutely. It's one sky. Everybody's got the same sun. Everybody's got the same moon. We might have different vantage points from how we view them, but it's all one sky for everyone. And that's kind of why amateur astronomy and astronomy general is so much fun, because everyone can see the same stars. You can go to different places in the world and you go, oh, that's Orion, or that's the Big Dipper, or what's the name of that crater on the moon? And everybody has the same names for things. Different superstitions, but those make for fun stories. And fun stories are great to tell over beer or over coffee or late at night or early in the morning.
And this has provided a great retail opportunity, marketing opportunity for those that sell those special glasses, whether the kids or adults. There have been some glitches, some faux pas along the way. But what are the importance of these special glasses? I mean, what if I were a Gavone and I happen to be out in Glendale, Wyoming with you, where you're going to catch the full eclipse, 100% totality, and I look up at the eclipse without glasses? What happens to me? Do I become blind and sterile?
Well, not sterile. You know, you got to do a lot worse for that. So, but when you look at, when we're looking at the sky, you notice you can always glance at the sun. Anybody can glance at the sun. We do it all the time accidentally. But in New York City, even though it's getting 70% covered, you're going to be fine glancing at it. But if you were to like really say, I really want to see this thing and force yourself to stare at the sun, yeah, you're going to go blind. And that's just what happens whenever you stare at the sun. So if you want to be double, triple stupid, you would then take a pair of binoculars. And this is a really great way to kind of blow your brain out, is you actually take binoculars and put that in the sun, and all of a sudden you'll hear this puff of smoke coming out of your eyeball. That won't be any good. So you can't do that. If people don't use anything that's like telescope or binocular related to put to your eye without proper filters. So I've got proper filters. Everybody here out in the field's got proper filters. Well, having a barbecue and looking up. And
I think that's important, because I think a lot of people hear that. They think the glasses look kind of corny, kind of silly. They want to be too cool for school, and they think that they're going to take their naked eyeballs and look at this thing for an extended amount of time and mess themselves up.
That's right. Now, the best thing, the simplest thing that anyone can do, that if they want to see it and it's totally safe, what you do is called a pinhole projector. And you take a big piece of cardboard, cut a hole in the middle of that, maybe cover it with a little bit of foil, take a needle, put a needle hole in that, and then project, and then that'll make a big shadow on the ground, except for the needle hole. And the image of the sun will go through that needle hole, and if you put a white piece of paper on the ground, you'll be able to see it. So that's how New Yorkers are really going to be able to see it, is the best way. Or go to Central Park and look at the image of the solar eclipse being projected through the trees. The actual crescent of the eclipse, right around 3 o'clock, 2:45 in the afternoon, between like 2:30 and 3 o'clock, it'll go through the trees and you'll see it. I've seen that before. It's amazing. The shadows become sharper. It's really strange. At about 2:45, between 2:30 and 3 is really when things really cook for New York.
Well, I guess you'd have to hope that some of the limbs of those trees don't crack off and come crashing down into your head, as has happened late in Central Park. But Jason, Ebony K. Williams has her designer Ray-Ban glasses, so if she were to stare up at this eclipse of a sun with her trendy Ray-Bans, that would not do her well.
That would not do her well. Trendy Ray-Bans, Oakleys, any of those.
What about with the polarized feature? Does that help me out, Jason?
Polarized doesn't do anything.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, so polarized is only when the light reflects off of a surface like the road or off of a piece of glass. That will polarize the light. But the sun's light is unpolarized and extremely bright. So because it's that bright, you don't want to look at it. And even up until around here, I mean, until it's 90%, so in about 45 minutes, it'll be 90% covered, it'll still be too bright to look at. So New Yorkers really won't see any difference in the ground around them. Just notice the shadows. They'll notice the strange images on the ground, and they'll find all these funny people running around with glasses and pinhole boxes and going saying, I'm going to skip work because, you know what, the FDR says it's going to get dark and I got to go home early.
Well, on that note, final question, J7 Kendall, is whenever you have anything happening astronomically, it's thought that it'll affect the tides, it'll affect the atmosphere, it'll affect Mother Earth. Will this in any way affect what we're going through, climate change and global weather patterns?
No, it's just all it'll do is it'll make the temperature in Glendo drop by about 5 degrees and everywhere across the path for those 2 minutes. And that's all it'll do. Because the moon just orbits the Earth, right? And the Earth just orbits the sun. And that happens, and that's been happening for billions of years. So the change in the weather and the change in the climate is not due to the moon. But it sure changes our personality, and it sure changes our perception of the world. So when we look at the sky, we say we're going to see a big change. But really, nature is going to say, you know what? Have a great time, humans. I'm going to make some more thunderstorms over Missouri.
I do appreciate that. That's Jason Kendall.
I love it. He is, like, stoked, man.
Part of the Amateur Astronomer Associations in New York, out there in Glendo, Wyoming, where they're going to get a complete view of the eclipse at 100% totality. To the phones we go, 1-800-848-WABC. First up in the queue is Maria from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Maria?
Hello, Curtis. You're starting trouble already. You said the eclipse and our president is going to speak. You kind of put a negative spin on it.
I was just joking.
We're trying to join the country together, not divide it. So
Curtis, people are sensitive right now. You can't be telling those jokes, man. Oh, my goodness.
I think it's good that we both come together, and I think our president is going to do that for us.
Well, I don't think it's going to be around Afghanistan. This is the longest war we've ever fought. We're stuck in that quagmire. I can't imagine anything he says tonight that's going to make it any better or any worse than it already is. I don't think a presidential address tonight on Afghanistan is going to bring us any closer together, Ebony.
No, what it is a very strategic, and I've always credited the president with his ability to control the narrative. I think he's very tired of people harping on him about his response to Charlottesville. In my opinion, a woefully irresponsible response. I think he's tired of people talking about these statues. I think this is his attempt, Curtis, to shift the narrative.
Well, I'm tired of buttressing up these corrupt officials in Afghanistan with billions of dollars of our tax money when, in fact, one moment they could be Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, the next moment they could be our allies. It's all dependent on who bribes them. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
New for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony. Exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
You're so distracted, Ebony K. Williams, because I know you'd want to be at one of your trendy solar eclipse watch parties right now, drinking your cocktails.
Not even a little bit. I got to tell you, when we came in the office today, I said, I know we got to do this solar eclipse thing because everybody in the country is freaking out about it. But on this one, I'm more like you. I kind of could care less.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Or couldn't care less, rather.
There's a small percentage of holy rollers out there, charismatics, evangelicals, who believe that this will herald the apocalypse. You know, the rapture is upon us.
Jesus is
going to
come back.
Trays, right?
Oh, okay.
Because whenever these kinds of situations transpire, it's always like that. Somebody always prescribes to it some doom and gloom scenario like it's going to be the end of the world.
Remember Y2K when the year 2000 approached? Something similar.
Or as I called it, Y2 chaos. where nothing really happened.
No.
lot of people were able to make money selling all kinds of survivalist materials and gear,
crazy.
From packaged foods to building bomb shelters, which obviously, if you live in some areas in proximity to where the North Korean missile strike had hit,
could come in handy.
That might come in handy.
Could come in handy.
But when all is said and done, at the end of today, with it being such a day in which there's no productivity in the workforce at all.
I've really not seen the trains as empty in the 3 years I've lived in Manhattan as I did this morning on my way into work.
An excuse to take a day off, kick back, drink, get drunk, stare up at the sky.
It's like a hurricane day, and we used to have those all the time in Louisiana.
And say, wow, this is like triple X pornography. Look at the sun as it merges with the darkness.
Yes.
Ooh.
You're such a freakazoid, Curtis.
I'm telling you.
Oh, my God.
Bring the noise!
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio talk show host.
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
Woo! Just hearing that makes me excited, Curbs. You know we're on less, I think it was 17-day countdown till kickoff. The start of the fall NFL season. Such an exciting time for Americans like myself, like you, that love good old, what do you call it, smack mouth American football.
Oh, smash mouth American football. Good old common football that is not that fake, phony, fraudulent football they spell with a U. Kickball, goal, soccer.
Look at you hating
but
on soccer.
But tonight, it's Giants-Cowboys, right? Now,
yeah,
who's going to be watching?
Pre-game.
You're going to be watching Giants-Cowboy or the presidential address?
I'm going to watch both. I'll be watching Giants-Cowboys on my smartphone device, and I will listen to what the president has to say about this overdrawn Afghanistan war on my actual linear television. But
well, football is a form of war. It's about the closest that most young men will ever get to fighting in a war is when they battle on the gridiron.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. And I love it. I love it. I'm a big advocate. I'm a big fan of football. I know the CTE stuff. It's controversial. You know my take on that. I see that as well. But I would be lying, Curtis Lee, if I said I will not be waiting with bated breath to drink my brewskis, my beer, eat my chicken wings, my other snacks, and enjoy a full season of American NFL football.
Really? But that's not what this demonstration was yesterday, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us to conduct this broadcast by NJDiet.com. The demonstration yesterday was to try to get everybody not to participate in this year's football season, NFL football season, by either boycotting the games in terms of not watching them or not attending them. And I don't think that's going anywhere, Ebony K. Williams. That's going anywhere.
So I'll tell you this, Curtis. I'll go deeper with you. That's one suggestion, because let's back it up factually. Yesterday in Brooklyn, NYPD, mostly black officers, either currently on the force or retired, around 80 or so, stood in protest and behind Colin Kaepernick. Or for those that don't know, Colin Kaepernick, apparently quite the controversial figure here, former quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, actually took them to the Super Bowl, came up short there a few years back. But anyways, he has not been signed by any NFL team since last year. He decided to protest all year long by not standing for the national anthem. Now, let's hear from Colin Kaepernick exactly why he chose originally to sit on the bench during the national anthem, then after consulting with a veteran, because as you might imagine, Curtis Lee, we got a lot of pushback for literally riding the bench during the national anthem. People said it was unpatriotic, anti-American. How dare he? So he talked to veterans, said, listen, I'm not trying to say that. I am saying something else, which we'll hear in a moment. The veteran said, you know what? You want to protest? Here's what you do. You show us respect by taking a knee. You get on a knee. If you're going to protest, don't sit on the bench. That is seen as disrespectful. Take a knee. Kaepernick took a knee the entire season. But this is the reason he said he did it.
No, it was something that was really just a personal decision where, know, I didn't agree with what was going on. Part of the oppressive system is you're going to have that backlash for trying to fight for people. And that was something I was fully prepared for.
So that's what he said. He said he was prepared for it, and that's what you have to be. This is America. You have a First Amendment right to free speech. He exercised that, Curtis Lewa.
Yeah, but
as I say, you're taking my word. Well, I know it all too well. I exercised my right to free speech last week on the docket, and absolutely, as I've said, financial, professional, and personal consequences have followed, and you have to be prepared for that. But let's also listen. The New York councilman, Mr. Williams, he was standing in front of these 80 some odd officers who, I want to just say, the officers said, as members of law enforcement, Curtis, they confirm that the issues Kaepernick is protesting around police brutality, around the criminal justice system being discriminatory against minorities, law enforcement saying those are real issues. And I want to speak on this because it's important. Many Americans see this divide as Blue Lives Matter or Black Lives Matter, either or. Yesterday, we saw 80-plus officers of the NYPD saying both blue and Black Lives Matter as they stand united with Colin Kaepernick. But let's hear from the councilman.
Indeed exist.
We have to tear down and be honest about this discussion. All of the people behind me risk their lives, so to speak, to protect folks. And they are standing with Kaepernick because they understand how important it is to push back on the structure.
So here's the thing. That's one position. And as a black councilman, that's almost more or less expected. Not that all black people agree with the protest, but we can hear that. What I'm more intrigued by, Curtis Lee, when I want your take as a white man in America, some of the white NFL players are now speaking up, some in support, some against. But one that I was particularly struck by is Chris Long. Chris Long, the son of Howie Long, the great NFL Hall of Famer. And Chris Long currently plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. He, I think, had a very nuanced, I appreciated where he was coming from. Let's hear Chris Long's take.
It was a hard week for everybody. I think it's not just a hard week for somebody being from Charlottesville. It was a tough week for America. And like, really, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, you need white athletes to get involved in the anthem protest. I've said before, I'll never kneel for an anthem, because the flag means something different to everybody in this country. But I support my peers, and if you don't see why you need allies for people that are fighting for equality right now, I don't think you'll ever see it. So, you know, my thing is this, you know, Malcolm's a leader, and I'm here to show support as a white athlete.
The mayor. The Malcolm he was referring to there, Curtis, of course, being Malcolm Jenkins, his teammate who decided to protest similar to Kaepernick. But why I liked what Chris Long said isn't because he even really agreed with the protest itself. I didn't really hear him say that. He also said specifically he will not take a knee because the flag does mean something different. The anthem means something different to everyone. I can respect that. But what he said, Curtis, was a demonstration of something we are sorely lacking in our country today, empathy. He's saying, as a white player, I might not understand it. Hell, I might not even agree with it. But my brother in the NFL, my brother on the field is hurting, and I will stand in support of his pain versus the actual substance of his protest, which I think is a perfectly nuanced and legitimate point of view.
Well, look, part of this protest is that there should be a boycott of NFL games because no team has picked up Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick sucks. He's no longer the star stellar quarterback that he was when he appeared in the Super Bowl. And I was there in the Superdome when the lights went out for 45 minutes against the Baltimore Ravens. Ultimately, the Ravens won the contest. Colin Kaepernick was great then.
Mm-hmm.
He has diminished skills.
Yeah. So I'll tell you this. I agree with you. But here's where, and I was ready. And the argument I've made all this time, Curtis, is look. You're right. You can exercise your free speech, but you got to bear the consequences. I suspected up until 2 weeks ago that if Colin Kaepernick was what I would call an elite quarterback in his prime, the level of Tom Brady, the level of Peyton Manning, perhaps in his heyday, he could take a knee all day long. There would be an NFL team that would pick him up because his product. Right. But then, so I'm with you. His skills are kind of wax sauce right now. But what about Jay Cutler? What about Jay Cutler, who used to quarterback for the Chicago Bears? Talk about wax sauce, terrible trash QB, yet the Miami Dolphins just picked him up last week. So I want to hear what you're saying, Curtis, that the reason Kaepernick isn't playing is only because he's a crappy quarterback these days. But then you got trash like Jay Cutler being picked up?
That's an owner's prerogative.
I understand, but I'm
fans,
just saying.
Owners, sure. It all meshes in. There are a lot of reasons that owners don't sometimes draft certain players or decide to keep players on their roster. It may have a political orientation. It may be personal. The owners may feel that it'll bring the divisiveness into the clubhouse.
Oh, I'm sure that it will. I don't disagree. Right, I'm
so
only saying.
Why would you do that to your team?
Well, it's not about doing it to the team. It's
particularly
also
when
because
this guy can't take you to the Super Bowl.
I understand. It's a cost-benefit analysis. I agree with you, Curtis. You're 100% right. I'm only pointing out the hypocrisy that it's only because he's a bad quarterback that he's not on a team when you've got real trash like Jay Cutler starting QB for the Dolphins. We'll take some calls now. We'll go to Shelley from Hackensack, New Jersey. Shelley, you're on 77 WABC.
Good afternoon, and I agree with you. Cutler is garbage.
Thank you.
But at the end of the day, Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick, he made his bed. He's got to lay in it, okay? He's a very wealthy man. He didn't have any issues in Black America, police brutality 2-3 years ago.
Do you know that, though, Shelley? Do you know that he didn't have any issues? I hear you. He's wealthy. And that's often, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's often the dismissive, not that you are, but that's the dismissal, right? Well, he's rich. What does he know about oppression? But certainly you can't not be sympathetic or understanding or stand up for the rights of others just because you have a certain financial privilege.
No, I'm not sympathetic to him because, you know, he had an opportunity when he first got into the league to stand up for causes like that, to speak out. I didn't hear or see anything online or in the media. So he wants to take a knee, and I have a real issue with people who disrespect the flag.
But why is it a disrespecting of the flag when the veteran him that he consulted with and many other veterans, Shelley, have said they don't agree with the substance, but they respect his right to protest? Isn't that the most American thing we can do?
No, this is the greatest country in the world. You should respect
but
the
flag. But are we perfect, Shelley? Are we perfect? Shelley, is America perfect? Well, I mean, come on. That's to me a bit of a ridiculous statement because we can be the greatest country in the world. I agree with that. It doesn't mean we can't do better. We'll go with Robert from Brooklyn. Robert, you're on 77 WABC. Oh, we just lost Robert. No problem there.
Hello?
What I'm more intrigued by in this moment in our history as a country, as divided as we are our white brothers and sisters who are uniting, not in the substance necessarily, not taking a knee necessarily, but putting their arms around the shoulders of their fellow brethren on the gridiron in support of their protests, their feelings, showing that level of humanity and empathy. Here's Derek Carr, the highest paid QB in the league, with his expression of this moment.
Yeah, we wanted to, obviously, we're not protesting, you know, we're not doing anything like that. What we wanted to do is show all the kids that look up to me, look up to him, that white kids, black kids, brown kids, blue, green, doesn't matter, can all be loving to each other. And that's what me and Khalil are, is we're best friends and we love one another. So the only reason we did that is to unify people and to unify the people that look up to us, because obviously we see what's going on in the world, and obviously everyone pays attention to the national anthem nowadays. And so we just said, well, obviously this is the best time to do it while still honoring our country, because I love this country more than anything. We're free, you know, to live here and play this game, and you know, but we're also free to show each other that we love one another. And I think that that's the message, and that's the only message we were trying to get out.
Thank you, Derek Carr. Thank you, Derek Carr.
How quickly that will end if he has a losing season. How quickly.
What, his ability to empathize?
Oh, hell yeah. Are you kidding? The divisiveness and in the clubhouse over who's playing, who's not playing, who's doing their job,
not
doing
their job. You're so cynical, Curtis.
Get out of here.
No, you're cynical.
These guys make millions of dollars.
So what? That means they can't have an opinion about what's right and wrong in America?
Then when all of a sudden they lose some money because they have an opinion,
no,
who cares?
No, I disagree. I care. I care. It matters. And sometimes the most privileged among us are best positioned to make the argument.
What, Kaepernick?
Absolutely.
Are you
absolutely
kidding?
Absolutely.
He had everything. He has diminished skills.
You know what? That is not the you're being dismissive, Curtis.
What does this have to
can,
do?
You can hate
seriously
Kaepernick as a quarterback. That's fine. That doesn't
nothing
take away
to do with
his right.
You're looking to NFL players guys with muscles between both ears to lead the way.
How is that different than Muhammad Ali? And I criticized him for that. I'm actually having a moment. It's not about Kaepernick, Curtis. It's bigger than him. It's about Derek Carr. It's about Chris Long. It's about everyone in this league standing up to show empathy with their fellow brethren.
You know, one of your black ball players is going to be cut. Do you think you could give him some money? You know, take a cut on your contract so he won't get cut.
Maybe you're projecting. Maybe you're projecting, Curtis.
No.
Let me ask you this, and
the
then we'll go. You know what, Curtis?
That's
you projecting.
It's all about the
that is
agent.
You. Maybe
it's
that's
all about
you.
Their own families, and they that, see their players,
I
their fellow brothers
you.
Getting cut all
I
the time.
I disagree with you. And you know what? Maybe he gets cut, but Derek Carr, Chris Long, Marshall, they are standing up. You know, it's not about heroes, and it's not about being flippant and dismissive. They are showing a better side of humanity.
Watch their fans boo them right out of the
And you know what? Maybe they're prepared for those consequences.
Bring the noise!
Studio View, WABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect,
a great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Steve, first up in the queue in the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Steve?
Hey, thanks for having me. I just wanted to say something. You know, I agree with you, Curtis. This isn't so much a racist thing as this is actually his skills. If you look what happened to Tim Tebow, the same exact thing happened. And, so it can happen to either side.
No, I hear you, Steve, and no one is saying that but for this protest, Colin Kaepernick is some elite QB, least of all me. I'm actually trying to move it bigger than race, bigger than Tim Tebow expressing his Christian beliefs, and some people felt he got criticized for that. I'm talking about empathy. I'm talking about the ability to say, you know what, I don't necessarily experience what you experience. I don't necessarily have the same plight that you have, but as someone that I care about as a fellow human being, and in this case, fellow brother in the NFL, I support your experience and your right to express it. That's what I'm talking about, Steve.
Look
at the tone. Come on, Steve. Golly, we have an empathy deficit in this country. Wow. You know, Curtis, I really expected more
Kaepernick,
of you in this moment.
Millions of dollars protected by off-duty cops.
Yeah, because we know rich people can't have feelings.
Why does he hire off-duty cops to protect him?
You know what? I don't think that it's bigger than Kaepernick. This is not a defense of Colin Kaepernick as a human being.
He's a hypocrite.
It's his right to, does he not have a right to protest, Curtis?
Of course he does.
Okay, so what
and
are you talking
there are
about?
Consequences for
understood.
Your actions.
But what about Derek? I'm talking about the empathy in this segment.
Should I empathize with him?
Because he's a human being. Why do you have to agree? You don't have to agree. The point of empathy, it's not agreement.
I have no empathy for him.
Well, and that's a shame.
He attacks
you
cops.
Should have,
he wears
no, he doesn't attack cops. Well, you know
he
what?
He wears picky shots.
The sergeant's entitled to his own point of view. Exactly.
And I'm entitled to mine.
You can have a point of view.
But if a guy is in practice and he has pig socks on, he's making a statement against cops.
That is so convenient to have one example of one statement and it dismisses his entire argument. That's convenient, Sliwa. Very convenient.
He had to go out and try to find out where you can buy piggy socks.
How dare I make a broader point of humanity? My goodness.
Let's go to Dave calling from Florida. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Curtis. Hey, Ebony. How y'all doing?
He's had better days.
I know you had better days. Hey, listen. Two points. First, Ebony, you stated that the most American thing you can do is protest. I have to vehemently disagree.
Oh, yeah?
The most American thing you can do is put the uniform on and defend your country.
You know what? You know what, Dave? I will give you that's very American as well. Of course it is. But you know what? Many veterans said that they fight and give their life for the right to protest. And you can quote them on that. You can quote them on that, Dave.
I'm a veteran. My dad served 40 years. I served 10.
And thank you for that, because you're right. We wouldn't be free without your service. You're exactly right.
That's right. So they wouldn't have that right to protest.
But that's the point, is you guys serve. You can have your right to your opinion, Dave. But I do know many veterans that say that they fight and die so that we can protest.
So that's the most American thing. Secondly, when you compare, so you made a statement about Cutler being garbage and Kaepernick. Okay, if I'm an owner and these two quarterbacks are on the market, Kaepernick and Cutler, I look at them and I say, okay, they both have similar talents and abilities. What am I going to get the extrinsic values? Well, Kaepernick is going to bring me a lot of strife, a lot of discontent from the fans. Cutler's not going to bring me that.
He also is not going to bring you many touchdowns either, but that's fine.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good games and bad games.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
One 38, and we're going back to the topic of family now, Curtis Sliwa. And really, this is piggybacking off of what I was basically pushing down your throat last segment, which is this notion of empathy and what I submit to be an empathy deficit in our country. The topic, though, this time is interracial adoption here in America is on the rise. Now, a lot of people find, especially if you're a millennial, my generation, no big deal. You see interracial families all the time. You even see families where not just blended by way of being biracial, where there's one, you know, parent of a certain race and another race and they're blending. But you actually see full-blooded white parents with black children or vice versa, or full-blooded Hispanic parents with white or black or African or Asian children. You see these mixed-raced adopted families all the time now in America. But, you know, there was a time where not only was it frowned upon, I was surprised to learn it used to be basically illegal. They had to pass a law, Curtis, back in 96, you probably remember this, called the Multi-Ethnic Placement Act, to allow white parents who actually wanted to adopt black children to be able to do so. Because up and until that point, the presumption was that we lacked such empathy, such ability to understand those that were different than us, that only parents of the same race could be culturally sensitive enough to raise the children. I was shocked.
In fact, there's even more of an emphasis on that now, ever since we were told originally that Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting was over the impasse that was created by Vladimir Putin denying Americans from adopting white babies from Russia. Remember, that was the whole reason for that meeting. Yeah. But really, when you look at the field of adoption and how complicated it can be, and how for years there have been parents who have gone to China and waited months on end and filled out application after application and gotten taken through the ringer, or other countries, or you see people who will travel all the way to Africa, like Madonna and some others, to get a black baby there.
Angelina Jolie, sure. Man.
Right, as opposed to getting one of the many black babies who are in foundling hospitals and orphanages here. You say to yourself, wow, you're right. There was this rule. In fact, I remember it during the David Dinkins administration. Family services, one of the key determiners of who could adopt and who could not adopt, mm-hmm. was the half-brother of Malcolm X. And his determination, along with others at that time, was that if you were going to adopt a baby, it would have to be a same-race family.
Sure.
So if you were a white family, you can only adopt white children. If you were a Hispanic family, Hispanic children. If you were a black family, black children. And that obviously put a crimp into the adoption process, because there were always many more white families who were interested in adopting unwanted babies than there were black or Hispanic families at that time, who you could understand, because if anything, you look at the population statistics, white families were having less and less children. At that time, black and Hispanic families were having more children. So it just made sense. But the rules and regulations were stacked against white families, so they were not permitted to get children of color. Now that those rules and regulations have been relaxed.
Except for one exception, I will point out, currently, you still pretty much can't get a Native American baby. That is the one exception. There is still the Indian Child Welfare Act that says that the tribes get first dibs, basically, on adopting Native American children.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
The Supreme Court is going to take it up probably this fall.
Anyone who has been to tribal lands and have seen the dysfunction of many of the reservations, mm-hmm. clearly understand why the best place for that child growing up might not be a reservation with all the dysfunction.
You know, I agree with you, but let's break it down, Curtis. Where are these presumptions coming from that the best place for the child is in a same race home? Well, historically, that was actually the argument. If you remember, I was going to make fun of you and say back in your day. When we go back to 1956, I believe it was, Loving v. Virginia, the Supreme Court case that struck down the ban against interracial marriage in this this country. The argument was, is that you should not be able to marry interracially in the country, primarily because of the children, because it will do a disservice to the children born of these unions to be raised by a parent that is not of their same exact race, and that was somehow against not just public policy, but against the best interest of the child. You fast forward to the gay rights around legal marriage arguments made not long ago, just a few years back. Same arguments, Curtis. Many saying that it is unfair to the children. What about the children? That the children of gay couples are somehow disadvantaged because of gay parenting. And it's quite ridiculous to think that a white parent or a black parent or an Asian or a Hispanic parent or a Native American parent cannot adequately raise and be culturally sensitive enough to rear a child of a different race.
Well, not only that, but if you look at the problem in foundling hospitals, orphanages, foster care, the system that replaces finding a permanent location for a child to grow up with a family of their own, you realize what is the problem? Mm-hmm. These children need families, mm-hmm. if at all possible, if they can be placed, if there's a family that wants them, mm-hmm. And there are no overwhelming problems to that family having the child, we should be actually acting as grease to the wheel. We should be making it possible, mm-hmm. not trying to make it so prohibitive,
right.
Either through cost or exhaustive process, mm-hmm. that families just give up in frustration. Mm-hmm. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's quickly go to Dan, who's on the line in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here at WABC. Danny?
So, Curtis, you wouldn't mind being raised by a gay parent, two gay guys?
So if I were in a foundling hospital, right, crying myself to sleep like so many other children who don't have parents, and you need to have caretakers come in and basically walk them and talk to them and care for them on a regular basis. Would I have preferred to grow up in a gay household with loving, caring parents? Of course that would have been preferable to being in a foundling hospital, Dan.
Your mentality's changed now, but back in the day, would you like to be raised by gay parents?
I think he just answered
the question.
I don't think as a baby it's a choice you have. Yeah. It's sort of like, yeah. Where would you rather be? A foundling hospital, sure. with 40 other babies crying in their cradles?
Probably being neglected on some level or by caring parents.
Not getting it. Yeah. I know my mother ended up volunteering at the Angel of Guardian home where she ended up broke her back when she fell on some vomit as she was cradling one of the babies that were in her care. And she would always describe to us, my two sisters and myself, wow, how lucky you are that you got a family. Mm-hmm. You know, every day that I go to volunteer at the Angel Guardian home in downtown Brooklyn that was run by the Archdiocese, you see all these unwanted children, knowing mm-hmm. that almost none of them are going to be adopted.
Yeah,
they're going to probably end up in foster care or group homes, or they're going to be in an orphanage of some type.
You know what it is, too, Curtis? There's actually a collateral benefit. So not only do I agree that parents should be able to adopt any race they want, I also am not going to play dumb or act like it's not important to have some education and knowledge level around the culture of child you're getting. I don't believe in a colorless society. Just like we were talking in the beginning of the show, you're talking about you were at the Polish festival for your culture. I think that's great. And I think if you're going to take a black child and you're a white parent, you need to be educated on black culture and be able to teach that child that. If you're a black parent and you're going to have a white or Jewish child or Hispanic child you're adopting, you need to pass on that child's cultural identity to them through education and support. And one last note, that actually, Curtis, will, I think, better prepare our society to be more empathetic. We can basically learn about one another through these interracial adoptions, which are on the rise. I think that's a collateral benefit.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC to Barbara in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here at WABC. Barb?
Hi, Curtis and Ebony. I'm so glad to hear you having this conversation. I am a single adoptive parent of a child from Nepal.
Okay.
And have lots and lots of friends, heterosexual couples, gay couples, single mothers. And there are so many kids that need these homes. The richness of a multi-ethnic family is unlike anything else. I love being a multicultural parent. We see so much joy in these children as you said, that otherwise would not have homes, whether it's in the foster system or in international orphanages, where they don't have the opportunities for education. They don't have the opportunities for career
Barbara,
education.
Can I ask you this? First of all, I want to commend you because I think you're sharing this is very important. You're being vulnerable around it. And most importantly, what you're doing to change and positively change this child's life is incredible. Now, you mentioned that you, one of your children, I believe, your child is from Nepal, Indian. What, if anything, have you done around educating yourself and I'm sure the child around that aspect of their culture?
It is sort of a part of our lives.
Oh, good. Good.
I brought him home at 2 years old. We attend, there are camps, they're called heritage camps, where every summer we go, we spend 4 days with children that are adopted from India and Nepal.
Oh, cool.
They have other camps for Korea, domestic, Haiti, wherever it might be. So these kids can have members of those communities come in and teach us about the culture, teach us about...
And Barbara, I would imagine that you guys probably get some pretty ignorant questions from people around that. What is your response? What would you say to other parents that are looking to be a part of this type of life-changing, wonderful thing?
Don't realize that these comments are coming from people who don't have that awareness, that don't have that ability to reach out and love somebody who might be a little bit different than they are. And that we need to help our government and help our organizations realize that we have to make this process easier. I have not had as many comments as a lot of my friends, but I have had, I'm Christian, a strong Christian, and I've had organizations say, single parents, I have a family member, single parents should not be able to adopt.
That's ridiculous. There's so many children in need out there of a loving, warm family atmosphere to grow up in. Anybody who doubts that, go to a foundling hospital, go to an orphanage, go to a group home, go see foster care, the many problems that take place. There are success stories, but there are also many problems that result from that. And tell me, it's not better for a child to be placed in a family, regardless of the makeup of that family, that's a loving place for them to grow up.
It's a literally non-debatable issue to me. I could not agree more, Curtis.
1-800-848-WABC. And it's Colleen from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here at WABC. Colleen?
Hi, Curtis. Hi, Ebony.
What's up, Colleen?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I don't believe Latinos should adopt or foster black children. I think this country, we talk about black supremacists and KKK, but I was married in a Latino family, and they could join the KKK with no problem. They have the same philosophy. They hated blacks. I'm black, and my husband, you know, was Latino, and his mother was so concerned we'd have black babies. She didn't have grandchildren. And they didn't like the Jews. So I'm like, what's the difference between your family to my late husband and you and the KKK? No difference.
Okay, Colin, it sounds like you had quite a little bit of a racist mother-in-law. And for that, I'm sorry. But I'm going to respectfully hope and pray that that is, and I know for a fact, not representative of all Hispanics. Certainly not the ones that I know and have been privileged to interact with. That's a pretty sad story there. My goodness. Talk about bad mother-in-law.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and lead
attorney, radio talk show host,
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
6 minutes after the hour or two, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us to conduct this broadcast by NJDiet.com. And it's the battle over the statues, whether they stay, whether they go, or whether they're in an impasse. A number of situations unfolded over the weekend. But let's go back to the statements that were made by the President of the United States on his third try to deal what had happened in Virginia the weekend before.
This week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
And a lot of people said, wait a second, I thought we were just talking about Confederate war figures. But then Al Slim Shady Sharpton of the National Action Hate Network brought it up in a discussion he had in a sit-down with Charlie Rose.
This is personal. This is not some kind of removed discussion from us. Our families were victims of this. Certainly they ought to be removed.
Therefore, everybody associated with slavery in terms of any public monument to them.
When you look at the fact that public monuments are supported by public funds, you're asking me to subsidize the insult
then I repeat,
of my
Thomas
family.
Jefferson had slaves.
And I would repeat that the public should not be paying to uphold somebody who has had that kind of background.
Now, as Al Slim Shady Sharpton was telling that to Charlie Rose, Charles Barkley, the former NBA star and analyst, was actually having a sit down at a public event in the state of Alabama, where he was born and raised, and he said something completely different.
I'm not going to waste my time worrying about these Confederate statues. That's wasted energy. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep doing great things. I'm going to keep trying to make a difference, number one, in the black community because I'm black, but I also going to try to do good things in the world. I'm not going to waste my time screaming at a neo-Nazi who's going to hate me no matter what. And I'm not going to waste my time trying to worry about these statues they got all over the country.
So do you leave them up and ignore them?
Or
do you...
I've always ignored them. Rick, I'm 54 years old. I've never thought about those statues a day in my life. I think if you ask most black people, to be honest, they ain't thought a day in their life about those stupid statues.
And that was Charles Barkley. Over the course of the weekend at your favorite university in North Carolina, Duke.
Boo.
They removed,
go Tar Heels.
They removed the image of Robert E. Lee from the campus. And further south in Texas and Austin, under the cover of darkness late last night, they removed four Confederate statues, one of them being Robert E. Lee. When the administration was asked, now, wait a second, the last time this issue came up, it was after the racist attack, the shooting that took place in Charleston, South Carolina. You opted then to remove the statue of the president of the Confederacy, Jeff Davis. But you decided to leave the four remaining Confederate statues. Why did you all of a sudden decide under the cover of darkness to remove them now? He just said, we want to be done with it. And this opens up the whole topic again. The statues, those that are out there. Do you remove them? Do you leave them? Do you allow due process to take place? Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And here in the city of New York, Comrade de Blasio, your mayor, not mine, I didn't elect him, has decided there will be a 90-day review of all statues, all memorials, all commemorations that might in any way, shape, or form reflect an era of hate or racism. And boy, that is a wide brush to be able to use on all statues. I have a feeling Christopher Columbus at 59th Street Columbus Circle, you're going, gone if it's going to be based on that.
I think I'm going to surprise you, Curtis. I'm pretty much with Charles Barkley on this. I think it's fine. I think if this is your cause and you're black, white, brown, Jewish, whatever race person, and you've decided to really put a lot of time and energy and resources into protesting these statues and bringing them down. I talked earlier on the show, Curtis, about my experience as an undergrad at UNC Chapel Hill, being a part of a movement that got our hall renamed from Sanders, who was a KKK Grand Dragon.
Now, let's
and all
specify
of that,
because I thought it was named after Colonel Sanders.
That's
because
you're thinking about fried chicken. I need you to move your advanced
Well,
merit.
He's a colonel.
Yeah,
when you said general, then
I
said, I didn't know Colonel Sanders was a general.
Yeah, you know, there you go. Fair enough, fair enough. But that's fine. My point is that's a fine fight to pick, and it's worthy cause, and many people are doing it, and they should continue doing it.
But now.
Me personally. I'm with Charles Barkley in the sense of I think that there are other things that I, Ebony K. Williams, could be using my time, energy, and resources towards to further the advancement of things that I think are important in my community, like education, criminal justice reform, and entrepreneurial opportunities.
You know, I will tell you a very funny story. When I was organizing in Jackson, Mississippi, in the heart of the South, where they still fly the stars and bars
I've been to Jackson a few times.
Flag of treason, although Jackson is a predominantly black city.
Like a lot of the South, by the way.
We were having a press conference at the state capitol, and we were driving in all the way from California. I had a mixed group of Guardian Angels, almost all the Guardian Angels
in Jackson.
It's a
long drive. How many hours?
Well, we had
stops along the way.
We had stops.
Okay.
We were stopping in Phoenix, rolling.
Oh, you guys were on tour. You're on tour.
Yeah, we were barnstorming.
Got it.
And so Benny Jones, the leader, African American, because it was mostly African American members of the Jackson, Mississippi Guardian Angels, said, "We'll meet at the state capitol." So I'm looking at the maps, and I go to the state capitol, which was the old Confederate capitol.
Mm-hmm.
Benny Jones and the local Guardian Angels from Jackson are meeting at the present capitol. And so, this is before cell phones and other forms of communication. It took us hours to be able to figure out where each of us were because they were both designated as being almost the
state
same
capitals
on the map.
Yes, yeah.
What a gavon I was there. Anyway, let's go to the phones, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Paul first up from Bethpage, Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Paulie?
Curtis and Ebony, great show. And I just want to try to be brief as I can. And maybe Ebony could look this up. There was a U.S. public law, 85-425, Section 410. Passed 23 May 1958, but anyway, it makes all Confederates, soldiers, sailors, Marines, fought the Civil War, or veterans, United U.S. citizens and veterans. That's the way they changed that law. So, in effect, you know, I mean, everybody was here, was fighting in the North and the South, and to say it was all wrong is ludicrous because, you know, our history, you know, the history of our country and everything else, you go through the hard times and tough times and you rectify it, you find the middle ground here, but this is like insane here, really. I mean, it really is, you know? You got to honor the dead and, you know, to go back and beat on everybody. It doesn't make any sense, you know? And maybe you could look that up. And
wait a second, Paul. Honoring the dead is one thing, with a cemetery, honoring a dead traitor with a statue in their honor is completely different.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe Ebony could look this law up and go into it a little more, Curtis. I just got it from a...
All right,
sure. I will be happy.
Retired FBI agent.
Paul, I'm fine to look it up. I think we have to remember, and I appreciate the law as much as anybody, as you know, some of this stuff is deeper than legal ease. These things are more important than statutes or statues. It is about the effect. So, again, I can understand, as a black person... I did feel a way at 16 years old walking into a building named after a man who was the grand wizard of a local chapter of the KKK as I took history classes on Black American studies. But it was almost interesting to me in that that's how evolved and complicated and dynamic American history is. In the same way, Curtis Lee, that I would imagine as a Jewish person, I am not Jewish, but I would imagine if I had to walk past a statue of Adolf Hitler, I would feel a way. That's all.
Let's quickly go to Jonathan in Jersey City. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Jonathan.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Great show as always. I wanted to ask a question. This could go to Ebony because she's always so insightful, and being a legal mind, I trust she'll have a good response to this. But, you know, many years ago, a gay male had asked Martin Luther King Jr. if he could help him to understand his tendencies in being a homosexual. And Martin Luther King Jr., in short, responded to him that there was a few methods for him to deal with his problem. And from that, we could assume that Martin Luther King Jr., in his position, is that he not necessarily in favor of gay relationships. So shouldn't we start to protest and take down every Martin Luther King Jr. memorial or streets? That
I think that's a far reach, but I see your point. But let me finish. Let me finish my statement. I think that's apples to oranges argument you made there. But I can respect where you're coming from, that there are certainly no perfect heroes, right? There are no perfect individuals that we honor with statues. I hear you there. But again, when we talk about the collective, you cannot deny that having a Grand Wizard of the KKK, having unapologetic, treasonous leader of the Confederacy, it can be a problem for many of us.
Can I agree to one thing, though? We cannot take down any statues to Colonel Sanders of Kentucky
Fried Chicken. No, we're in total agreement.
He just represents...
He stands for all Americans.
Exactly. Thank you. Let's go to Suzanne from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Suzanne?
Hi, thank you. First, Curtis, I have to tell you, you were my first celebrity crush when I was like 13 or 14
Suzanne.
Years old.
And I hope you've evolved.
You have aged so beautifully. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But I just have a question.
Yikes.
Why were none of these statues offensive in the 60s when they were marching on Selma? Why were none of these statues offensive during Carter, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama?
Now they were, Paula.
2 years.
Paula.
No.
But they Paula, they were. No, Paula, they were offensive, certainly, during many of those administrations. Again, I told you my personal experience. I'm only 33 years old. Over 10 years ago, this was an issue on campus at UNC Chapel Hill. That's just one personal anecdote. So that's simply just not true.
No, what's not true?
That it wasn't an issue up until now.
Suzanne,
it's been an issue.
I'll give you an idea of what an issue it is. There are more Confederate war memorials on Monument Walk in Richmond than anywhere else in the United States. It's like 20 of them. It's overwhelming. In order to try to stop the controversy 20 years ago, the local representatives in Richmond decided at the end of the Monument Walk, we'll put up a statue to Arthur Ashe, African-American, great tennis player, unfortunately died at a very early age because he was from Richmond. That sedated the opposition at that point. But obviously, what's being targeted right now for removal of Confederate statues at some point in the future, that Monument Walk, which has attracted a lot of tourists, I might add. It's one of the reasons that some people actually go to Richmond, is to walk along this grand avenue with all these unbelievable monuments of Confederate generals you never heard of, you never studied about, but they have these plaques, these renditions to them. The universities are on both sides. And then at the very end, after you get past Jeff Davis, Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, you see Arthur Ashe, and you're like, huh?
Right. Interesting.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's quickly go to Pat, who I believe is calling from Bayside. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Pat?
Yes, good afternoon. I just want to know if either of you have ever heard of Lieutenant Colonel John Pemberton. He was a Confederate cavalry officer, and he was one of the founding fathers of Coca-Cola. So I was wondering, do you boycott Coca-Cola also?
No. And remember, I was a Coca-Cola addict for many years before I developed colitis and ileitis, but he is absolutely correct. The main bottling plant for the international world headquarters of Coca-Cola is in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there is a strong
deep-seated history. I get it. Yeah, like I said, I think the people that are taking to the streets and protesting and boycotting and ripping down Confederate flags, more power to you. Seriously, more power to you. It's not my jam. It's not my get down. I think there are far more prevalent and immediate places to improve the lives of black, brown, and other oppressed people in this country than to be worried about some statues and flags that are really, I just don't get off on these symbolic victories. They don't do it for me.
I'm just asking all of you, leave Colonel Sanders of KFC alone. Please, leave him alone. 1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis and Ebony. The stories, the moments, the new midday show.
Up on the law and the law one.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
Oh, my goodness. Who would have thought a bunch of dead people would get everybody so riled up? We're going to the lines with Randy from New Jersey. You're on 77 WABC, Randy.
Well, good afternoon, Ebony, and good afternoon, Curtis. I just want to say that, I mean, I think this whole thing is a little much. I mean, I tend to agree with Ebony about the importance of it. But setting that aside, the people that are being honored in the South with these Confederate statues are traitors to America, first and foremost. There's a qualitative difference between them and slave owners such as George Washington or Thomas Jefferson. In terms of the bad feelings that it causes for people, I mean, I've seen universities, for example, Yale, tried to have the kids wanted the name of the John C. Calhoun College changed because he was a senator from the South in the late 1700s who owned slaves. And ultimately, they ended up actually changing the name. And in Princeton, the Woodrow Wilson School of Government, they were going to change that. Kids petitioned to have that name changed because he had some racist attitudes. That part of it.
Well, yeah, I was going to give you in the best school ever, UNC Chapel Hill. Of course, that's my alma mater. It was called Saunders Hall, rather. He was a Klan leader, William Saunders, and we changed it. It is now called Carolina Hall. But to Curtis's point, we went through years of due process and went about it a particular way.
My point is that, look, okay, you have a coalition, they're upset. They bring this before a review board who's ever responsible for the placement and maintenance of the statue. If it is the will of the people, I would put it up to initiative and referendum. If it's the will of the people to get rid of the statue.
That's what we did. We had a board. They had a school board meeting for UNC, the board of trustees, rather. We ended up voting 10-3 to change the name. Now it's called Carolina Hall. Can't offend anybody.
Then eliminate it. And if you lose the plebiscite or the referendum, then it stays. And we just have to be happy
democracy.
With that.
Democracy. That's how it's
instead
called democracy.
Instead of this overnight. Randy, they removed four statues at the University of Texas in Austin, which is not a hotbed of KKK Confederate activity. It's the most liberal state in all of Texas. They did it under the cover of darkness because they were afraid there might be some blowback. They didn't have to do it overnight. So ridiculous. Such an overreaction. Let's see if we can go to the phones. Next up in the queue is Rich, who's calling from White Plains. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Richie Rich.
Hey, Curtis, Ebony. Look, first of all, what I just heard you say, you can't conflate referendum with election. Okay, a referendum goes to the vote of the people. So I don't trust politicians, okay, because none of them has a spine on this issue to make the decision. So when you say referendum, I say people.
Yeah, well, exactly. The people will decide, or in the case of the university, the students will decide if it's a plebiscite amongst the students. And then you go through forensic debate, you debate both sides of the issue, and then you leave it to the people to decide.
Okay, the point I wanted to make was this. When you go up to the people on the left and ask what they're protesting about, they say they're protesting against hate. Now, with that said, you would think they'd be protesting against Muslim extremists. Because there's nobody demographically...
Rich, I hear you. I hear you. You know, I'm not going to go with you all crazy. You have to understand, though, people have a right to protest as broadly or as narrowly as they want to. So if they want to protest hate around white supremacy only, or just like if they want to protest around Black Lives Mattering around the issue of police brutality only, that is their right.
They have to be specific, Ebony.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They just go out there and say we're protesting against hate.
Okay. Well, I guess they need a better messaging.
Well,
they need a better publicist.
The Confederate symbol is a symbol of hate.
Treason and anti-American.
You supported slavery. That's part of the reason that the Civil War was fought, to support the right of the South to have slaves. You cannot look at that in anything other than a hateful act. What do you think? It was beneficial to slaves? Then you'll conjure up that argument in which there will be some loony kazoonies out there.
A lot of people say that. Slavery was the best thing that ever happened to black people.
Oh, sure.
I came over from Africa,
you know, and it was a much better life.
The cocktail bar on the Middle Passage, it was just dandy. I mean, I've heard it all, Curtis.
Anyway, up next, now, as Rich spoke about the left, I think we can all agree most of the points of view out in Hollywood are leftist progressive.
Absolutely. A hotbed.
They have low box office this summer. Low box office. It happens. It's like an ebb and a flow, right?
Business.
They're blaming it on, get this, Trumpers and Trumpets boycotting going to the movies or paying to see the movies online.
Which shows you how much they don't understand the Trumpers and Trumpets as a demographic.
If your number one movie this summer has been Dunkirk.
What?
Then I think Hollywood itself has the bulk of the responsibility here for having low box office receipts, plus the fact of the prices at the theaters, plus the fact you have to look at 30 minutes of advertisements before you get to look at the movie that you paid to come and see.
Yeah, you pay $20 to see a crappy movie.
Plus you got Ken Duffy with his cell phone on as he's yapping away while you're in the middle of Dunkirk saying, how come I don't see any Nazis in this movie? How come there are no Nazis in this movie? But anyway, on that note, okay, let's get our news headlines and updates.
Nice transition.
New for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony. Exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
.238 as we continue here. Ebony K. Williams, this is the old school Cool in the Gang from Jersey City, not the new Jack Cool in the Gang, and singing about Hollywood swinging. And with this,
I feel like that's kind of got a freaky deaky vibe to it.
No, not really. They actually were followers of Screwy Louis Farrakhan, but I like their music. I put that aside. You see, I am sometimes able to put
that. Objective.
Totally. But let's look at this weekend's proceeds. The top box office attraction was Samuel L. Jackson and Ryan Reynolds' action comedy, The Hitman's Bodyguard. It took in about $21 million from a little more than 3,000 theaters here in the United States. So not too great, but not too bad. Mm. And basically this summer for the box office receipts has been blasé, blasé. Hasn't been horrible, but it hasn't set Hollywood on fire either. And there is a whole contingent of folks now coming to the conclusion, as we're almost at the end of the summer season of movie watching come Labor Day weekend, September 4th, that in fact this is a result of the, quote, silent boycott that supporters of Donald Trump, Trumpers and Trumpets, are putting into place because they so object. To Johnny Depp, if you remember his joke about it being time to assassinate the president.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Not.
Actor Corey Stoll, who calls his participation in a Julius Caesar adaptation that leaves the Trump-like leader soaked in stage blood, his method of resistance. Kathy Griffin, Rob Reiner, the director, Meathead, calling for an all-out war on Twitter to resist. And we can go on and on and on. But I was stunned when I saw this story because I said to myself, this is the excuse for Hollywood not doing as well as had been anticipated, for having some box office busts.
I'm glad you used the term excuse because that's exactly what it is. I'm a movie person, Curtis. I used to have a habit, actually, when I was in Los Angeles. I would take myself to the movies by myself about once a week, if not every 2 weeks. And they just have not been worth my dime anymore. They're not entertaining. I can barely tell you the last time I saw something that was worthwhile. In fact, I will tell you, I believe it was Fences I saw, but that's been over 6 months ago. I have not seen a quality film. I haven't even seen a quality advertisement for a quality film, and I don't even know when. So you can take a, you can blame a lot on Donald Trump, but lackluster sales in Hollywood, no LA, no my friends in Hollywood, many of whom I'm still close to. You got to work on your writing, you got to work on your acting, you got to work on the storytelling, because really, quite frankly, it's been whack this year.
Well, you know, Michael Savage, who follows us, has told his Savage Legions that they should boycott Hollywood. They shouldn't go to see any of the productions that are up on the big screen. I'm sure he'll be taking credit for this call by Hollyweird that their box office receipts at the theaters are down because those of you who support Donald Trump, both men and women, have decided you're not going to the movies. Is this true, ladies and gentlemen? Maybe I'm off. 1-800-848.
Well, no, you're off, but I don't think about this.
WABC, that's 1-800-848-9222. Now, I quickly look to all of the, well, let's call it what it is, because there's more of it now than ever before. Before a movie even gets promoted sometimes, Ebony, I'm sure you've seen this, where it's stolen.
Yeah, leaked. Yes, yes, yes.
And it's put out on and uploaded on file sharing sites like Pirate Bay and others.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, people are getting an opportunity of seeing the movies before they even have to pay at the theater. And never mind having to pay outrageous amounts of money for
$20 popcorn.
Yeah, popcorn, watered down soda, all the Juju Beats, Good and Plenty, Good.
Junior Mints. Those are my favorite.
Oh, Junior Mints.
I'm a Junior
Mints. And how much is a box now of
Literally, it's probably like $9, like $8.95 for a box of Junior Mints.
And then you go to a theater. Okay, the seats are a lot better than they used to be. You know, they made them more comfortable. But they better be comfortable because, like, for the first 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you don't get to watch the movie.
Sure.
You get to watch advertisements, promotions, previews of upcoming movies that are going to be a hell of a lot better than the movie itself, because the previews are always good. You know, the previews, hey, that looks like a pretty damn good movie.
Sure.
Then when you end up wasting your money going to that movie, you curse the preview that you saw maybe a month before when you were forced to look at 20 or 30 minutes nonstop of commercials and previews before you can actually watch the movie that you had come to pay for.
Yeah, because it was a setup.
But to blame it on Trumpers and Trumpets.
Again, plenty to blame on President Trump. And you know I had my say and what I blamed on him on Monday last week. But this right here, no, Hollywood, this is actually on you. I really can't remember a worse year. And I'm a movie person. I'm not one of those kind of indifferent people. I enjoy going to the theaters.
I'm thinking back with the passing of the newer kid, Jerry Lewis, in 91.
Mm.
I never liked any of his movies because they're all cornball movies. But the king of comedy with Robert De Niro, when De Niro kidnaps him and forces him to do a talk show. Hey, what's the matter, Jerry? You don't know me anymore? I'm a person of no consequence. One of the classic lines. If you notice, I use that line all the time. Oh, a person of no consequence.
No consequence. That's where you got it from.
What a great movie. Oh, no, it really never got its due play. Never really got its due play. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Frank, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Frankie?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I definitely watch less movies because of their liberal attitudes and their outspokenness. I mean, it's, you know, it's America, and it's their right to, whoever they are, to speak their mind, but it's also my right to not spend my money on their stuff because of their views. I also don't watch as much football as I used to because of what's going on in the NFL.
Well, that was the argument last year's season until the end when the games, obviously, because you're getting into the playoffs, they were a lot more competitive.
Sure.
But a lot of the games in the beginning, even when Colin Kaepernick took to his knee during the singing of the national anthem, they were really blowouts.
Yeah, and the game has been slowed down so much. And I'm like I said, I respect the concussion protocol as much as anybody. But now the game is at such a slower pace. It's just not the same football we used to watch.
Oh, so you don't watch as much?
No, I watch it. I'm just that's how I know it's slowed down. It's not quite as interesting as
entertaining. As long as they've got those Hooters wings out there for you.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's the best part of the game. That and a brewski.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go to Cy in New Brunswick. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Cy?
Hey, guys. You were referring to Rupert Pupkin in The King of Comedy, Curtis.
Yes.
That's a great movie. Better be king for a day than schmuck for a lifetime, right?
Yep.
Ebony, I'm like you. I used to go to the movies by myself all the time. The IFC down on Houston Street, downtown. And I'm like following Dr. Savage. I don't want to support these guys. I wish they would just stick to their craft.
Yeah, but what even, give me an example, though, darling, of something that you want to go see, but you're boycotting because of political reasons. Fair enough. I just haven't seen anything that I even wanted to go see, but that's just me.
The elitist attitude. They need to just stick to their craft and don't be so mean. Robert De Niro's movie, The Comedy, it was horrible. He was so nasty. It was mean-spirited.
Yeah, well, Cy, I'm sure there are some people who are following in your footsteps because they feel that Hollywood has slapped them in the face because of their extreme political views. But I have a feeling it's a lot bigger than that.
I think these movies just suck.
848-WABC. Let's go to Jay in Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Jay?
Afternoon, peoples. The reason nobody's going to the movies is because of the Cody program, which lets everybody watch everything online, as well as films is on demand within 5 weeks and on DVD in like six.
That's true.
So why would you pay $20 to go to the movies when if you just wait a few weeks, you can watch it at home?
That's true, but if you're like me, Jay, you're old-fashioned, and you enjoy that, going to get your ticket, that process, the pageantry of it all, walking in the theater, seeing that level of screen and audio, it feels worth it to me if the film is good. But my goodness, these things have been crap recently.
Well, you'll still go to see a blockbuster, you know, like a Star Wars or something like that, but the average film that you're mediocre on going to see, meaning, you know, I'll watch it if it comes out, you know.
No.
You're not that enthusiastic. So Hollywood makes a bunch of duds, so that's real.
That's exactly right. They make a bunch of duds.
Yeah, but it'll be an ebb and a flow. One season will be a dud. Next season, they'll be doing boffo box office.
I feel like the award seasons, Curtis, come February are going to be very dry because nothing's even worthy of a Golden Globe or an Academy Award.
Let's go to John in Yonkers. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Johnny?
Yeah, I don't watch Jimmy Fallon anymore because it seems like every joke he does is about Trump. Now, every president deserves to be dumped on now and then, but to the point where it's completely overboard every night. I just turn it off and I'll watch a rerun of King of Queens or something.
A rerun of King of Queens. And how many times have you seen that episode before?
I can watch it 1,000 times rather than watched Jimmy Fallon.
Now well, you know why? Yeah. You know why I never watched the King of Queens?
Why?
Two reasons. The star is a tried and true Met fan who I hate, despise, I loathe.
Oh, you're so petty.
And his wife in the movie was a Scientologist.
Yes,
She's now had a falling out with them.
Yes.
So, you see, I've discerned that I'm not watching those episodes anymore ad nauseum over and over because, A, there's a Met fan there, and, B, a former member of Scientology.
You are literally completely petty. I will tell you, though, I'm a big fan of the callers' practice of watching the same episode over and over. I have seen the Golden Girls all 6 seasons probably well over 40 times.
And that's why you refer to yourself as the Platinum Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's go to Jerry in the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Jerry?
Good afternoon, guys. I'll be quick. I got a lot to say on a lot of these matters, but I'm going to say this about Hollywood. They think that their votes, that their opinion counts more than everybody else in this country. If anybody tried tinkering with this election, it was them when they petitioned the electoral votes.
Well, they certainly came out for Hillary
in
a huge way.
A lot of help that did.
But it didn't swing the election for Jerry. So again, just like talk radio has tried to swing elections for Republicans in the past, it has worked. It's all dependent on the luck of the draw on that particular season. And I think
the people want what the people want. I don't think that what we say, I think it's valuable, but I don't think we're swaying votes.
Now, what movie in your mind would be the all-time favorite movie of Trumpers and Trumpets? Would it be Gone with the Wind, your favorite movie?
Probably not.
Or would it be, might malign them, say, Birth of the Nation. Oh, that's their favorite.
You know
right? What? That's what Black Lives Matter would probably say.
Ooh, yeah, exactly. Not the, you know about the Nate Parker one, Birth of a Nation, about the Nat Turner revolt?
No.
That Birth of a Nation?
No, not that one.
Good
the
call,
original.
Justin Bieler.
The original.
Okay. Well, after my docket on Monday, I'm not touching that one with a 10-foot pole, Curtis.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Bring the noise!
Studio View and WABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect,
a great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
Now, I say there's a plenty you could blame on the president, but sagging Hollywood box office sales? Give me a break, Hollyweird. We'll go to Diane from New Jersey. You're on 77 WABC.
Hi, I'm a real movie buff as well. I'll go to the movies like you, Ebony, by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I like to critique the cinematography, editing.
Sure.
But definitely, over the last 20 years, they've gotten so political. I just saw Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
Well, the way it was made, the cinematography and editing, all that was very well done, but there's a scene where Wonder Woman joins forces with Chris Pine's character, the white guy.
Yes.
And they meet up with the Indian guy.
Yes.
And the I think it's a black character, the black guy, the other guy. And, of course, they're joined forces to stop the Germans from developing that tear gas that so many soldiers and civilians suffered from.
Yeah, well, you know, some Ebony, I don't think it would matter to you. Your favorite movie this summer season has been, what, the Emoji Movie?
No. Actually, I am guilty of using them sometimes, but I would never see the movie. I keep it high class.